seriousness of the charges may nonetheless put us in a situation in which the emergency board may yet be called upon. Now, you do notice, I think, that we, in the hopes that the study will give us some information that we can use for the second year of the biennium, what we have done is to notify our contractors that we are asking them to change their bids, to submit those bids for 1 year rather than the 2 years, again, in the hopes that we'll be able to have more information on how to maintain a more adequate control of the budget. I think that really concludes what my at least initial statement, and I'd like to call on Kingsley Click, who is really extremely helpful and knowledgeable in this area, to add anything that she wishes to say on behalf of the State Administrator's Office. I'm sure he would be here. I assume you're all aware that his wife has produced a bouncing baby boy and that he has other duties.
At least for the moment, yes. I appreciate your being here. I was just sitting here trying to figure out a way I could get the speaker to send the committee out to Massachusetts in August or so to see how their study's coming.
Yeah. They are going
to
send
the council love to go to Boston.
Right.
Going home. I think a question maybe to start off with, Kingsley, because I have asked that some amendments be drafted through your offices on the possibility, if it moves forward, if the board is no longer is abolished, that there be some separate fund account set up that is in my view impermeable both ways. I'm concerned about if you only have one side of the firewall and still something can happen to the other side of the firewall, and I know we're moving for that. Some discussions have come up about whether the responsibility then should be, if the board is eliminated, should go to the Chief Justice or to the Court Administrator. Perhaps you'd comment on that.
Yes. Oh, do you want to check that, or do you want me to make an initial? I'll make an initial comment and then give my feeling. I think even if you put it in the State Court Trial Administrator's Office, where I think it ought to be, it should be recognized that the Trial Court Administrator is still subject to the discipline and even to being hired and fired by the Chief Justice, so that at some point the Chief Justice is going to have some residual responsibility. But my experience is that to the extent that you can insulate the Chief Justice and the court from responsibility for this to the maximum extent possible, it ought to remain with the Trial Court Administrator.
State Court Administrator.
I'm sorry. Excuse me, please.
That's okay. For the record, Kingsley Click, State Court Administrator's Office. To your question, if the subcommittee decided to abolish the board, both Bill Linden and the Chief Justice have stated then they feel the appropriate placement would be under the State Court Administrator's Office the way it was prior to the establishment of the board.
Okay, just one other question. The study that, or the money that's been provided by Ways and Means, I love this because Ways and Means is making tremendous substantive strides for our committee. My interest, I guess, here will be to make certain that we're setting the policies and not Ways and Means. But the $106,000 is there for a study. In the budget note, it indicates that's to establish a database. It doesn't say about what. But it's a neat little term of art that they seem to be throwing out in a lot of study on this ground. So establish a database. I guess I would be more interested in an opportunity for the state to examine other models or to find, or at least to have some report back to the 89 legislative session as to what we might do, what we need to do to get a better management handle on, you know, which, and one thing is the experience you've gone through with the board, I think, is instructive, and with the current board, and we shouldn't miss that opportunity. Do you have any views of that, or do you understand what the Ways and Means folks were trying to send, what kind of signal they were sending out when they put that budgeted amount in there?
Mr. Chair, they spoke about, it seemed like everybody had an idea what the study should do, and I have to refer to the budget notes to see how it finally was written up. I know how 5059 was written up, which doesn't explain anything. My understanding was their primary concern was some sort of independent evaluation of how costs are paid now, how much people charge, what it is for what types of cases, what's the average, how do contracts compare to non-contracts, what are the statistics, what would be ideal sort of database to set up on a permanent basis, what kind of information should be collected that would help you have an ongoing one knowledge of what was happening with your costs, where they were coming from, but also what would help determine policies to set. There was also discussion of a qualitative analysis where you would look at quality in addition to costs to help decide what would be an optimal. There was a lot of discussion about what is expected when someone is appointed to a case, what is a Cadillac job, what is a, various other terms used, but I think there was concern that there'd be a minimum standard of expectations of what counsel would do if appointed to a case, and there was some discussion of that. But I think your idea of other models was not really discussed, and I think that would probably add a missing element to that study.
I may need the money for defense too. Let me ask just one final question here, and that's a scenario question. If we put together a policy where we put this activity under the state court administrator, we isolate that fund as a so that we can't move monies back and forth between that fund and other funds in the judicial department, and we run out of money. My assumption is the first thing that's happened is that would happen previously, and that is that the board or the court administrator would come back to the e-board if we weren't in session and ask for the additional funds to bail them out. I think there may be some expectation on some part of some Ways and Means members that in fact what they want to do is they want you to go back into the court's budget to get that money, which is one of the reasons that I want to separate that out so that doesn't happen. It puts the e-board, puts the state in a very awkward position, but I would also assume that the attorneys who are part of this system would probably, if you're not providing funds, either the courts would be forced with a situation of dismissing cases for lack of counsel, or you may find the innocent defense attorneys filing in federal court against the state, which I think almost happened in the last case. Is that a likely situation that we're faced with? I want to get that on the record.
When I came down here on April 6th and saw what the circumstances were, I said, in fact, that we were on the verge of a constitutional crisis of just the kind that you indicate, which would either be resolved by the federal courts or would be resolved, and I think we were on the verge, may still be, of contempt citations against attorneys who were ordered to proceed with representation of defendants without any guarantee of payment. I don't have the ability to predict how that lawsuit would come out at the present time. There are a lot of divergent opinions. All I can say is that it's something which should not happen, and that to put the judicial system and defendants in a position to where they're required to be represented, even if the state were justified if the courts were justified in insisting that people be represented, it's hard to consider that a defendant so represented would be enthusiastic about the quality of the representation which he would be getting under the circumstances. And you might expect, given my knowledge of what the federal courts have done with comparable situations, for example, where attorneys have taken on more cases than the standards would indicate they would be able to handle efficiently. It seems to me that you would have the federal courts, one way or another, looking over the shoulder of the state criminal justice system if such an eventuality were to occur.
Further questions? What we're going to do is schedule this again for next week. Since we're into a situation where there are a large number of hearings going on tort, we're going to have to, and other things, we have one scheduled subcommittee per week. We're probably going to have to go to night meetings. I hate to do that to me and everybody else, but on this matter, specifically in other matters dealing with it. So we'll have those amendments and circulate them, and we would appreciate
your... Thank you. I do have one request. The uncertainty about whether the board is going to continue creates somewhat of an administrative nightmare, in that we are in the situation where we have to complete contracts in order to start the new biennium on July 1st, and we don't know where the responsibility lies for the completion of those contracts. So, for that reason, if the board is to be abolished, it ought to be done quickly, so that the transfer can be made as efficiently as possible, and so that we can be relieved of the burden of being uncertain about the policy for July 1st. Given
there is I appreciate that, and I appreciate your being down here today with us. If you have a minute to speak to Mr. Taylor, there's an administrative matter I want to make sure we're clear on, but I do appreciate your coming down. If there are no further questions, we'll move on this one. Okay, thank you very much. Okay, let's go to House Bill 3384. Dinsmore. Is that right?
Chairman, yes.
Good. Yes, we had a hearing and you had some testimony, and you're back before us. You have other great words of wisdom for us. You might just review for the committee what we're proposing here.
Okay, the purpose of this bill, Mr. Chairman, committee members, is back in 1977, when the Matrix application was put into effect, the rules are written as such that on consecutive sentences, you would establish a principal range, and the second consecutive sentence you would eliminate the past criminal history and go to a base range, or to the excellent category. And that has been, at that time, an interpretation of the AG as to how we should do that. We have since been advised by the Attorney General that that is in contrast or contrary to statute. This simply is to bring the statute into what the board has been doing for the last 10 years.
Is there any questions on this? Basically, this makes a correction to the, or not a correction, but it essentially affects the existing statutes to reflect what reality is, I guess.
Actually, instead of writing our rules to comply with statute, we're asking the statute be rewritten to comply with our rules, so it's kind of a reverse process.
So this process has been used since 1977?
Yes, it has. And it has now been challenged, and as a result, I believe you commented last time that you had seen the latest opinion of the Attorney General, and
I was given a copy of that opinion, and then I asked this bill be introduced through the committee to correct that. Any questions on this?
Ready for motion?
I'm ready for motion.
I'd move the bill to the full committee with due pass recommendation, Mr. Chair.
Representative Stringer moves House Bill 3384 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion on the motion? Clerk, want to call the roll?
Aye.
I guess Miller and Phillips are absent. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members.
We'll schedule that right away after the full. Okay. House Bill 3059. Who's here on this? Anybody here with us on this one? Nobody wants this bill? Can we just table it or no? Okay, pull up the wrong bill here. Let's start. 3059. OK, Okay, this deals, we have some amendments proposed, which are, let's see, large set of amendments. This bill is one that decriminalizes driving while suspended. If reason suspension is the person was convicted for driving uninsured. Is there anyone here to want to have comments on this, work on it? Okay, the amendments.
There we are.
Who drafted these amendments?
Legislative Council. The amendment passed out the last meeting.
Right. And the question I've got is. There's 32 pages.
This one here.
I don't have a copy of the amendment.
Copy of those. Did you have them? Did the amendments? Okay, am I the only person who has the amendments?
In me, here's mine. Let me get some more copies.
Okay, let's hold that over for a second maybe until we get the copies of those amendments. So let's go to 2190.
That's dash one, not.
Dash one amendments, yeah. Here, you want this? Let's go to House Bill 2190. Okay, this again deals with indigent defense. Okay, you have dash one and dash two and dash three amendments.
We just had a bill a week ago that seems to me assumed that there would be collection of indigent defense costs in these cases.
Okay, and what?
I don't have counsel. I don't remember.
Do you recall that we've also got three sets of amendments here that are trying to sort through this? We've got dash one, two, and three of these. I don't know whether these, you know whether these are these collective or contradictive or. Three sets of amendments?
Two.
Two. Maybe dash three. Does dash three take in the dash one or something?
I called Frank Gruber and have him come up in there. Always about a different
day. Yeah, I think we're going to probably do that. Understand that to us. Judge Pino is hearing that. Okay. Let's see what Peterson's got here. So let's hold that one over. So you want to get new records? You come in.
We do Joinder and the DA's are here.
Okay.
About it, so.
This is, that's which one? Yeah, what's your bill?
2193.
Let's go to 2193 for a second. We're going to have to get counsel up here on some of these other ones. So we've got a House bill, 2193.
My name's Dale Penn. Marion County District Attorney. I'm representing the Oregon District Attorney Association. 2193 is a bill that basically is adopting Federal Rule 8, which deals with joinder of offenses. And we have submitted a large quantity of written materials which traces the position of other states on the issue of joinder, but basically, we would ask the committee to seriously consider that bill for a couple of reasons. Number one, Oregon's procedure system is antiquated, and we are one of a very few states that has the presumption that we will have a separate trial for every separate charge. The federal system and the vast majority of states allow charges that are related to be joined into one trial. The example, the burglar who goes out and does 8 burglaries, and we have 8 burglary charges. The way it would be handled in the Oregon system now, it would be required that we have 8 trials if there's not going to be any admission of guilt. This would allow us to have one trial for those 8 charges. I believe that it would have a significant impact more than any other bill that is before this session this time on indigent defense costs, because it would allow a mechanism to be developed for payment, because we'd be focusing on the defendant rather than on charges, because the general rule would be all those charges are going to be together in one trial. And I think it would simplify the contract system. Certainly, I believe it would reduce trials, and it would reduce the processing of cases in the system. I've talked with Charles Turner, U.S. Attorney in Oregon, many times about this bill. He says there's no question it will save money in Oregon procedure. Being in the federal courts, they use this rule all the time. That is, in 2 sentences, why we really support this and would ask your support of it also.
Okay. Dale, I'm going to take a break because I don't have a quorum right now, so okay. We're going to stand here for a minute and round up some numbers.